Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Diggity, beautiful day here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia. I hope it's beautiful where you are, too. Ugly storm passed through last night. Kept the tribe Kincaid from going to the circus, but that's just as well. I hear the, as predicted, the camels didn't care too much for the thunder and the lightning. You know, being around buildings or inside temporary structures that are supported with metal poles during a lightning storm is not my idea of prudent thunderstorm preparedness. Nonetheless, it is a shame that they didn't get to go, but they'll be okay. They can remember this as the moment that they were scarred for life or something. That's how it goes. But here we are at Wednesday, halfway through the second week of May. And, well, you know, it's the middle of the week. It's Wednesday. You know, Wednesday. Hump day, downhill to Friday. Week's better than half over at this point. The work week, that is. But of course, brethren and sistren, you know it is so much more than that. Yes, indeedy, brethren and sistren, it is prayer meeting Wednesday. Here on the horn, the deacons have gotten done, as has everyone else down in the fellowship hall. Dadgummum, you know, you try to keep the deacons in line, but they're always going back for seconds on the dessert. The blackberry cobbler was simply scrumptious this evening, and you can't hardly be blamed. But everybody's done in the fellowship hall and coming up, heading up toward the sanctuary. The sinners are out smoking in the parking lot with the heathens. But it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn, brethren and sistren. And as we go for our opening hymn, I will remind you that there is a PayPal button in the bottom of the collection plate as the deacons pass them around, never mind any cobbler crumbs that may show up in the plate. Just kind of brush those aside as you head for the PayPal button. Remember, all we need tonight is 25. 25 people, $10 apiece. 25 members of the Thrifty 250 tonight to get us a little closer to where we ought to be as we approach the middle of the month of May and attempt to keep the lupine financial pest off of the horn's porch, as it were. PayPal button, and also at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, brethren and sistren. There is also a snail mail address you can use if you prefer not to use the PayPal method. Either way is just fine, but we're looking for 25 people tonight, $10 apiece, every head bowed and every eye closed, brethren and sistren, as I call our minister of music up to the stage. Brother, if you would lead us in our opening traditional prayer meeting Wednesday hymn.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solitaire baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh! Mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambs it out of you, kiddle it out of you too. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sisters, to the Cathedral of Common Sense. I am Archpope, Elder Supreme Rabbi, Exalted Imam, Holy Shaman, Prophet Bob Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. And I need you. They're still out in the parking lot smoking with the Senate. Get on in here. Come on down that blood red carpet and fall on your knees before the altar here and lay your hands upon the subwoofers and feel the waves of reason flowing through you. From the server on high, hallelujah, glory, hallelujah, how glory. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and we have so much to share and witness over this evening, brethren and sistren. Yes, indeed. We go first to the state of Tennessee, brethren and sistren. The state of Tennessee. You may recall it was some weeks back when that bastion of Christian courage, the Tennessee state legislature, attempted to outlaw foot washing. Remember that? In their dedicated, single-minded devotion to making sure that Sharia law can't get a foothold in Tennessee, the Tennessee legislature introduced legislation to outlaw foot washing. Glory, ha! Yes, foot washing. Kind of reminds me of that old German poem. First they came for the foot washers, but I was not a foot washer. And so I said nothing. And lo and behold, there's some truth in it, because they came for the foot washers, they got away with it. And now, flush with their successes, the Tennessee State Legislature has before it the most expansive anti-Sharia law bill yet conceived. Now, the world knows that Tennessee is serious about protecting the three great states of Tennessee from the pernicious evils of Islam. See, that last law was a little too broad because a little bit too late they found out that there was some Christian foot washers too that, well, didn't take too kindly to it. You know, because there's some foot washing goes on in the New Testament. I think one of the women actually washes Jesus' feet and dries them with her hair. Really? Dries them with her hair. I asked Agnes to do that one time. She didn't speak to me for a week. But we did not mention it again. So, no, really, in Tennessee, which has a Muslim population, it's not big, It's not obtrusive. But the upstanding, God-fearing, pig lickings in Tennessee is scared plum wet-pantsed of Sharia law. This is how the bill describes itself. It says it neither targets nor incidentally prohibits or inhibits the peaceful practice of any religion. I wonder if that includes Koran burning. And in particular, the practice of Islam by its adherents. Rather, this part criminalizes only the knowing provision of material support or resources to designated Sharia organizations or to known Sharia jihad organizations with the intent of furthering their criminal behavior. Do you understand now that the state of Tennessee seeks to define following one's own religious laws as criminal behavior? Now, I'm just asking, are there any synagogues in Tennessee? I'm pretty sure there are. And when Jewish folk aren't allowed to eat, you know, that delicious pulled pork barbecue that one can, or the ribs that one can, for instance, find in, say, Memphis when it's not underwater, they had to move the Memphis Barbecue Festival. It was slated to be down by the riverside, but no, not down by the river. They had to move it inland. But when Jewish folks say, no, I'm not going to the barbecue festival because I can't eat no pork, well, that's a religious law. That's Jewish religious law. And there's a word for it that I don't know that I'm sure Betsy will tell me what it is. Oh, wait. Kasrut? I don't know. Do you pronounce the TH like a diphthong? Kasrut? Kasrut? Kosher? The dietary religious laws? Yeah. Well, there are dietary religious laws contained in Sharia. Is that halal? Or is halal what's not allowed to be eaten? Either way, Muslims can't eat no pork neither, so they won't be to the barbecue festival anyhow. Hey, look, we found common ground. But seriously, the Muslim dietary laws that forbid the eating of pork are part of that vast body of religious law called Sharia. And the Tennessee legislature is making no bones about the fact that it intends to outlaw Sharia. Because to be an observant Muslim means that one is obedient to Sharia. Just as an obedient Jew is obedient to the Mosaic laws. Just as observant Christians claim that they follow the teachings of Christ Jesus. But in Tennessee, it's a no-go. The law as proposed there says Sharia organization means any two or more persons conspiring to support of acting in convert in support of Sharia or in furtherance of the imposition of Sharia. Shoot, that doesn't even make any sense. But what it means is that a mosque becomes illegal. An Islamic center, such as the one in the Nashville area, becomes illegal because mosques operate under their religious laws. Otherwise, they're just sort of not mosques anymore. See, that's the thing. These Christians think they're the only ones that have a religion worth observing. This is bigotry. the filthiest form. Everybody else can get together. You're Jewish, you can get together. You can get together over in your synagogue. You're Muslim, you can get together over in your Islamic institution. But it has to be a social club. It can't actually follow the religious strictures like don't eat pork. Or the strictures concerning divorce. You know, Roman Catholics can't get divorced no matter what the American law says. You know, because Jesus said don't do it. Baptist ministers will not perform, for instance, rededication of vows for a married couple who have been married for decades. If one of the two people in the marriage was previously married, Baptist ministers will not marry two people if one of them has been divorced. I know these things to be fact. And really. These are religious laws that cannot be imposed upon the broad body of American secular society. There are specific laws for how one gets out of a marriage, divorce, in Islam and in Judaism. There are specific religious laws for how one enters into a marriage in Judaism and in Islam and in, dare I say it, Christianity, because the Christian bigoted positions on so-called traditional one-man, one-woman marriage, those Christian views are what drives the bigotry against marriage equality in this country. Nothing else. The debate on abortion in this country is driven by people who are motivated by some sort of twisted reading of their Christian holy books. But in the state of Tennessee and in other states in the Union, Oklahoma, yeah, Alabama's thinking about some, I do believe, if I recall my conversations with Matt Osborne correctly. There are a number of states who want to define what religious laws Muslims may follow. If this law passes in Tennessee, it will mean that no Muslim may practice his or her faith in any manner save in absolute solitude, utterly alone. Because then they'll be furthering Sharia law. But some genius Nijinsky in the bill drafting department there in the state house on the Cumberland River did do some research. People familiar with Sharia will maybe recognize some of these words. Adherence to Hanafi, Maliki, Shafi, Hanbali, Jafaria, or Salafi is prima facie Sharia without any further evidentiary showing. Let me restate that. Without any further evidentiary showing. In other words, all someone need to do is point to someone and say, well, they follow Maliki. That's a Salafi over there. Okay? And the mere accusation is enough. That's what without any further evidentiary showing means. subscribing to Hanafi, Maliki, Shafi, Hanbali, Jafaria, or Salafi, as those terms are used by Sharia adherents, is prima facie Sharia without any further evidentiary showing. There's only one problem. You know what those words are? Hanafi, Maliki, Shafi, and Hanbali are the, well, those are all of the schools of Sunni Muslim jurisprudence. Remember the Sunnis, the ones we say are the ones that Bush was fighting? Well, those are the good Muslims. There's Sunnis, and there's what was it? Sunnis, and there's Lutherans, and no, there's Sunnis. Oh yeah, and them Shiites. Sunni and Shia are the two main branches of Islam. Of course, there's Sufism as well, which is a more mystical variety, I guess one could say. And the state of Tennessee wants to make sure that all of those forms of Sunni Islam are banned. And thus, if two people who are, say, Maliki or Hanafi, or a Maliki and a Hanafi, let's say they sit down to lunch and they say, well, I think we'll both take a pass on the pork and have a nice piece of chicken instead. Bang! Felony! Because they've just practiced Sharia law in the state of Tennessee in contravention of the state statute, and it's time for them to go to prison. There was a time in this world, and it was a very, very dark time, when this sort of thing was tried before. There was a time in Spain when, after the so-called Moors, otherwise known as Muslims, had been driven out in order to remain. You see, the Muslims had been more than happy to have... I always get them confused. Are they Sephardic? Or yeah, they're the Sephardic Jews. They had been more than welcome in Muslim Spain. It was a place of learning and culture and civilization. And the Jews had been welcome there as merchants, free to worship as they pleased. They were a benefit to the culture. But after a group of Spaniards, Isabella, Ferdinand, people who didn't bathe, drove out the Moors, they told the Jews they could have a choice. They could die for their heresies, including, you know, the blood libel of having killed Christ. They could leave yesterday, or they could convert. Some indeed chose to convert. There was a word in Spanish for those people. They were called conversos. And the conversos were watched very carefully. And the fact, for instance, I mean, these are historically, you can go and look these up for yourself. The fact that a converso was not frequently seen eating pork was taken as proof positive that they had backslid, and there was no alternative at that point in time save the cleansing, purifying strength of the flame. And no small number of converted Jews were consigned to the flame in the name of the saving grace of the loving Christ Jesus. Because they didn't want to eat pork. Now, in 2011, of the current era, or 2764 ab urbe condita, from the founding of the city of Rome, we find ourselves in the state of Tennessee in a situation in which a Muslim who, again, as a function of Sharia law, is forbidden from drinking alcoholic beverages, and that's everything from near beer to pick your poison, it is conceivable that a fine, upstanding, God-fearing Christian could look at a couple of Muslim guys and say, "Hey, fellas, come on down. Let's go down to the Sack and Save and get us a lottery ticket and a cup, and I'll spot the beers." Because, you see, Sharia law also precludes gambling by its adherents. "Come on, boys, let's go on down the Sack and Save and everybody get a lottery ticket and I'll front the PBRs. Now, wait a minute. Damn it, I left my wallet at home. Can you fellers lend me $10 and I'll give you $12 day after tomorrow?" But you see, Sharia law also precludes the lending of monies at interest, otherwise known as usury. Something also prohibited by the church, but, well, the church kind of let that go. "So what do you say, boys? Hand me $15, I'll give you $20 on Tuesday. We'll go down and get us an 18-pack of PBR in the aluminum cans, and we'll all get us a lottery ticket and a pulled pork barbecue sandwich." "My friend, I'm afraid I cannot do that, for my religion prevents me from gambling, loaning money at interest, consuming pork, or drinking alcohol, or gambling." "By God, it sounds to me like you're a pair of Sharia people. You following that Sharia, and by God, this here's Tennessee in the United States of America, and I'm going to see your Muslim asses locked up. Because this here's America, and America means Jesus. My God, I knowed how it was with y'all. I was just testing you." "Let me get Officer Friendly over here. Officer, we got us some practitioners of Sharia, and see, there's two or more of them just like it says in the law. I want them locked up for a long time, officer, because I don't want none of that creeping Sharia out there keeping my children from being able to suck down PBR and eat barbecued pork pig sandwiches and loan money at interest and gamble on the lottery. Get them, officer. Take them away. Throw away the key. Put them under the jail, officer, because this here's a Christian nation." Thank you, News Ninja Gene. I was right. Halal is okay to eat in Islam. Haram is forbidden. God, I kind of hate what I just did. If there were any Tennessee wingnuts listening, they'll know exactly how to go about testing the Muslims. That worries me. Yeah. Thank you, Jim. Sephardic and Ashkenazic. But it's the Sephardics that were the ones who went to Spain and then made their way up to the Netherlands, among other places. Sorry, David in Tennessee. I know this can't be a good moment for you. This gaggle of her pig lickings, little hoofers firmly in the trough, are paining me deeply, David in Tennessee says. Actually, Bob, there's a Muslim population here that is record-setting. The largest single Kurdish, read Muslim, enclave in the U.S. on the southeast side of Las Vegas. Fine folks by any and all evaluations. Well, except for evaluations by repiglick and frightmongers. Kurds. Remember the Kurds that George Bush told his little knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, Velcro shoe-wearing, knee and elbow padded house helmet wearing oatmeal dribbling followers were the good ones who had been put upon? Remember, it was the Kurds that caused George W. Bush to say he's a brutal dictator who kills his own people. That was the Kurds. And because that poem there on the Statue of Liberty says, I lift my lamp beside the golden door, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. You remember that. Emma Lazarus, wasn't it? Well, there's a big old Kurdish population in Las Vegas. And not too awful far from where they call their new home, there are some badass, mean-ass white people. Plumb, hell, bent on making criminals out of every last one of them. This is just creepy as hell. I know I say it a lot, and you probably get tired of it. But great God Almighty, we're into the second decade of the 21st century. We ought to be out there working on starships and crap. Instead, we're busily trying to further alienate an already put upon people within the confines of our United States because we're afraid they're going to bomb us. So in order to keep them from bombing us, we're going to alienate them so they might want to bomb us. That's some catch, that catch 22. It's the best there is. Really? No, you think I'm kidding about the bomb business, right? Well, before anybody decides to get all smug about the fact that, well, you know, we're not a bunch of damn rednecks from Tennessee, I urge you to consider a story coming from Amherst, New York. Yeah, that's not New York-a-sippy. Amherst, New York is, in fact, a suburb of Buffalo. And there's a road there. It's a busy road where a man named Michael... Oh, Jesus. Why couldn't he be Smith? H-E-I-C-K. Michael Hike. Michael Hick. Michael Hook. Michael Hake. Michael Hook. Michael Boehner. Michael H-E-I-C-K lives on a road in Amherst, a suburb of Buffalo. And next door to him, there's a brand new mosque. That's a pretty thing. Done in a sort of modern, contemporized version of old Islamic-style architecture. You know, there's a pair of ogive domes sitting on top of minarets. And there's a central dome with a crescent on top of it in the middle of the building. They're all sort of golden. It's called this mosque. This mosque is called the Jafariya Center. Wait a minute. What? The Jafariya Center? Wait a minute. Hanafi, Maliki, Shafi'i, Hanbali, Jafariya? Well, I reckon we know what kind of Sharia law they practice. I guess we do. The Jafariya Center. Now, there was no legal reason for the folks at the Jafariya Center not to be able to build their brand shiny new mosque where they built it. But Michael Hick Hike Hoke Boehner, hell, B-O-E-H-N-E-R is Boehner instead of Boner. It might as well be H-E-I-C-K, means Boehner too. Yeah, who knows? Michael Hick, which seems the most appropriate pronunciation. I remember the good old days when the Associated Press would provide you with a damn pronouncer every morning. I guess they fired that guy. Michael Hick is right pissed off. So Michael Hick has put up a sign in his front yard. Michael Hick has put up a sign in his front yard that says, "Bomb making, next driveway." No punctuation. Me, if I was putting up a sign that said, "Bomb making, next driveway," it would be, "Bomb making, colon, next driveway." The way Michael Hick, who was apparently not an English major, has it, it just says, "Bomb making, next driveway." Bomb making next driveway. Bomb making next driveway. But I think we get the gist, don't we? Michael Hick is a Hick bigot. He's ignorant as the day is long. And dumber than a duffel bag full of sweat socks. He told the Buffalo News, Michael Hick did, "The place is too close. I don't care what people think. It doesn't matter what people think. This is a way to get answers now. I get none from the town. The intent was to catch the eye of the people who I have a problem with." On the other hand, has decided to be cute. "Well, my sign does not say what driveway. It doesn't say at the mosque. If they feel it's at them, that's how they feel." Meanwhile, Dr. Syed Jafri, who is a psychiatrist and a member of the mosque's board of trustees, says, "I would really think it's an incitement of hatred against Muslims. Law enforcement should take it very seriously. Tomorrow somebody could say, oh, they have weapons, and people believe it." Now here's this expression of hate by Michael Hick. And Mubarak Abidi, who was president of the mosque, made a call to the local police, and they said, "Nothing we can do. Perfectly legal free speech." They've tried to pretty up the place, the folks there at the Jafariya Mosque. Rome wasn't built in a day, and plants don't grow overnight. They planted shrubberies along the property line. It'll get up to about 6 feet tall in a few years. Michael Hicks said, "That ain't enough! I want them to put up a 6 foot tall fence!" Meanwhile, people from the mosque have asked Mr. Hick for a meeting. Mr. Hick has not responded. He doesn't want to talk to them Sharia people. He says that mosque is built too close to my property and its bright lights violate the town code. Damn, it's a mosque, you know. It's not like they got big blinking lights that say bingo or anything, that being gambling. Barbecue hot and fresh? No, sorry. If they only used candles, Michael Hick would object because Michael Hick is a filthy Christian bigot. Place too close. I don't care what people think. It doesn't matter what people think. This is a way to get answers now. I got none from the town. The intent was to catch the eye of the people who I have a problem with. Yeah, catch the eye. That Ron and Raleigh writing in. Bob, obviously I'm not an adherent to the Sharia law because my local getting shit has their pulled pork special tomorrow, and I intend to get me a couple, and I'm going to wash them down with a Miller High Life can't abide PBR. Heretic! If the choice is between pork and religion, I'll take pork every time. See, that's kind of where I am. There's no God in the world that's worth giving up the delicate beauty of pulled pork. The Tennessee story not doing David in Tennessee any good at all. Guilty upon arrest? That should last about 18 seconds upon review, even by the courts here. And that's true. David's right. But it still has to be taken to court. There's a lot of cost involved with that. But David does have a serious question. Wasn't the period in Spain of coexistence between Jew, Muslim, and Christian a peak period of civilization advancement, especially compared to the next 300 to 400 years in the balance of Europe once it ended? You're pretty close, just asking, says David in Tennessee. Yeah. See, at the time when fine, upstanding Christian Europeans were wallowing in the mud in hopeless illiteracy that they lost after Christianity tore down the last vestiges of the Roman Empire, especially Western Europe. I mean, the Enlightenment and intelligence remained over in the eastern part of empire, but not in what was known as the Western Empire. Italy, up into Switzerland, France, Spain, Germany. Yeah, they were wallowing in the mud and with a lifespan of 35 or 40 years. And at the same time, the Muslim expansion into the Iberian Peninsula caused a flowering of knowledge and literally a saving of what was left of the culture that the church had torn down in Western Europe. Fountains in Cordoba. Beautiful courtyards. Gorgeous architecture. The Alhambra yet remains memory of that. But the Holy Church had to drive the Muslims out because you can't have things like literacy and learning and intelligence and knowledge when it can be so much better replaced by salvation and mud and fire and death and inquisitions and thumbscrews and iron maidens and the rack and the bastinado. So, yeah. Thank you, Sandra. Pork. If it's cooked right, I'll eat a pig's ass. Darn right. There's not much on a pig that isn't tasty. Joe Ray, our buddy, the foxhole atheist, says, very short, I'm all for letting the right-wingers make Sharia law illegal. The reason is simple. Sharia law includes the Ten Commandments.
Ooh.
Ooh! I think what Joe is pointing to is what we like to refer to as the law of unintended consequences. Yeah. David in Tennessee noting, yep, a lot of cost for the court review, an hour upon hour upon hour of right-wing hate speech radio paving the way toward violence and misunderstanding. And see, most people who are debt slaves in this country, and it's slavery, you know, just because the glove is made of velvet doesn't mean it doesn't have a fist inside it. Most people in this country are debt slaves of one form or another. And they don't have time to really inform themselves. So if they're in the car in traffic and the local version of Flush Flimball is hollering about Sharia law overtaking Tennessee, well, hell, it's on the radio. Why would he lie? See, it's on the news channel. It says right there, news talk. That means it's news. That means it's the truth. See how it works? News Ninja Susan noting, instead of building starships, we're hell-bent on reenacting the Salem witch trials. Yeah, we are. We really are. Also noting that test for the Muslims you put out there, Bob. Problem is, what you described is also a part of observant sects of Christianity, Judaism, and other observant faiths. But see, that doesn't matter, because it's only the Muslims that we're after, because they're the ones that want to take over America. Make our children give up their barbecue and take away my lottery ticket. Damn, I forgot to buy mine. Rats. Okay, the minute the show's over, I'm out the door because I think you got till like 9:30. Hey, what do you want? It's my retirement plan. If I could ever hit the damn thing, I could stop pitching for money. By the way, thank you very kindly for the individual who just kindly wrote in and took care of 3 slots out of those 25 we were looking for tonight. We're down to 22. We need 22 members of the Thrifty 250 to come forward so we can, you know, pay those bills. Because the one thing you can say about the Horn is that in large part, with the exception of one account, we're not debt slaves. We exist month to month by your good graces. And, you know, if we don't raise the money, lights go out. But we're not debt slaves. And, you know, that's part of the reason that it rains in the bedroom here. And come weekend, I'm going to try to get another tarp up. Last one blew away. Because there's no credit cards here. We buy what we can afford to purchase with cash. Not because I'm some sort of apocalypticist who's saving seeds and 50-pound bags of rice, you know, hidden, you know, buried in the backyard. But because this life is hard enough. I don't need to be sitting around worrying about a damn credit card bill. Because this is worrisome enough as it is. Because when you get right down to it, there really is, within a culture, and I'm not talking about mysticism or, you know, miracles or anything, or big juvenile delinquents in the sky talking to you. There's a good social reason for having a ban on the lending of money at interest. Because it artificially elevates a certain class of people above the rest of the people. The people who have money get to have an ownership stake in the people who don't because they lend at interest. And the interest is what allows them, once they've achieved their ascendancy, to maintain it. what a night this is going to be, because I mean we're far from done with the show, or with the stack. In the midst of everything, and no, this isn't technically a religious story, but it's kind of got an angle to it because, again, there's that proscription on lending money at interest. And that proscription on gambling. You know, Christianity once had a long-held proscription of gambling because it was said that the Roman soldiers who crucified Christ Jesus gambled, cast lots, I think is what the New Testament says in the official God Speaks It King James English, cast lots for his raiment. Yeah. And that kind of left a bad taste in the mouth of the early church. But I give you a man by the name of Raj Rajaratnam. Man, you put a beat behind that with about 130 beats per minute, and you'd have something that you could use in a rave, Raj Rajaratnam. I can just see a bunch of high people sitting around, or people in ecstasy going, Raj Rajaratnam. Yeah, I know. No, I give you Raj Rajaratnam, former man of great substance, with a hedge fund called Galleon. And he wasn't just a guy who worked for Galleon. He was a billionaire investor. And he ran one of the world's largest hedge funds. Well, today, he was found guilty. He didn't plead guilty, he was found guilty. In a court process that is at least marginally fair, probably fairer to him than it would be to some kid who was caught with a $15 rock of crack in his pocket, because he had him some bought and paid for lawyering going on, Raj Rajaratnam did. See, I'm getting good at that, Raj Rajaratnam. He was convicted on all 14 counts. Man! 0 for 14 is a bad day at the ball yard. He was convicted on all 14 counts of insider trading on Wall Street. It was Preet Bharara, the United States Attorney for Manhattan, who brought the charges against Mr. Rajaratnam. He said the message today is clear. There are rules and there are laws, and they apply to everyone, no matter who you are or how much money you have. Mr. Bharara's office has charged 47 people over the last 18 months with insider trading. Mr. Rajaratnam is the 35th conviction. Sounds to me like you don't want to mess with Preet Bharara. And this was wiretap evidence, by the way. This isn't circumstantial stuff. This is the kind of wiretap evidence, you know, that you use when you want to take down a mobster. Which, in fact, these thuggish Wall Street types, you know, they're gangsters. They really are. You know, let's not forget that John Gotti dressed well too. And they got him spot on, nailed him, busted him. 21 of 25 defendants taken down as a result of the case against Raj Rajaratnam have pleaded guilty. That includes former executives from IBM, from Intel, and from Bear Stearns. The defense from a Mr. Dowd who defended him, John Dowd, said, "My client's success as a money manager came from shoe leather research, diligence, and hard work." So he's gone down on 14 counts. On those 14 counts, he could almost face as much time in prison as that 18-year-old kid with the $10 rock of crack in his pocket. But remember, this wasn't a guy who was taken down. This wasn't pre-trial. This was after a sure enough trial finding of guilt. And once you're busted, let's say that 18-year-old kid with the $10 rock of crack, let's say he goes to trial and gets found guilty. Well, then, after the finding of guilt and the confirmation of the finding of the verdict and the imposition of sentence, the judge will say something like, I commit you to the custody of the United States Department of Corrections for assignment to an institution of incarceration for a period not less than 5 years nor more than 25 years. Take him away. At which point, the 18-year-old kid who had the $10 rock of crack in his pocket will stand up and say, Your Honor, we plan to appeal. Would you please set bond for my client? And the judge will say, No. Get him out of here. He can sit in jail. He can start serving his prison sentence whilst you're filing his appeal. After all, he might be, and this is an important phrase, a flight risk. Well, Raj Rajaratnam, Sandra noting, where's the white people at? Raj Rajaratnam owned land in Sri Lanka. He owned real property in Singapore. His net worth was estimated somewhere around $1.3 billion. That's billion with a B, folks. And, of course, upon delivery of the verdict, John Dowd, his very well-paid lawyer, stood up and said, Your Honor, I move that you set bond for my client, for we intend to appeal the verdict. And with the full knowledge that Raj Rajaratnam was a flight risk, because, after all, Preet Bharara told him so, Preet Bharara wanted him sent straight to prison, go to jail, do not pass go, do not collect $200 million in insider trading profits, go to jail. Because when you got property in Singapore and Sri Lanka, and you've just been convicted of something that can send you to prison almost as long as an 18-year-old kid who got found with a $10 rock of crack in his pocket, by God, suddenly Sri Lanka and Singapore begins to look pretty darn good. So the federal judge said, What? Raj Rajaratnam wants bond pending appeal? Oh, for mercy sakes alive. I think Raj Rajaratnam deserves a reasonable bond pending appeal, even though don't give it to anybody else. Tell you what. I'm going to set your... Raj Rajaratnam, pay attention, son. I'm going to set your bail at $100 million. No, really. Bail was set at $100 million. This sort of resembles one of those Austin Powers movies where Dr. Evil's either asking for too much or too little. $1 million. And everybody laughs. Dr. Evil, you've been asleep for 30 years. $1 million, nothing anymore. No, the judge set bail at bond at $100 million. And this is where it gets sickening. This is it was David in Tennessee put me onto this story, and this is where David's head started hurting worse. It is allergy season, you know. That's the sound of the gavel hitting the bench. Bond is set at $100 million. And the judge probably snickers up his sleeve. $100 million. You'll never get out of that one. Well, as David notes at that point, creepy things in bespoke suits slithered up to the bar, and with all the malice possessed by the dark-cloaked factors sent out by Cromwell to do his bidding, Raj Rajaratnam is now free to swan about his mansion until the appeal is adjudicated, his lifestyle in no way impacted by said $100 million bond. Let that there number sink in a little bit. $100 million bond. And things did slither to the top of the pond and put up the $100 million. Didn't even break a sweat. Because, you know, we can't have Raj Rajaratnam in prison for a bunch of dirty dealing on Wall Street. That's it. Can you imagine that? Honest to Jeebus, can you imagine that? One man has the influence to cut that kind of cake. $100 million cake. One. Meanwhile, let's swing south for a moment or two, shall we? Let's come down here to the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia, where a kid from college, acting upon good conscience, puts his life at risk and lays down in the road in front of a massive piece of earth-moving equipment, or chains himself or herself to a drag line on a toxic waste site, otherwise known as a mountaintop removal job. Upon arrest for trespass, which carries either none or next to no jail time at all, a bought and paid for magistrate or judge, magistrate, hangs $10, $20, $50, $100,000 worth of bond on that kid for their act of conscience to show them that they, by God, will not get in the way of the coal industry in West Virginia. And suddenly the bond becomes a sentence. Anybody want to take a bet? Anybody want to bet that Raj Rajaratnam will not see a day inside prison? Because, you know, forfeiting $100 million for these hedge fund types is nothing. He's worth $1.3 billion. With the bond put up, he's worth $1.2 billion. He can probably get by $1.2 billion, buy a lot of nice stuff in Sri Lanka and especially in Singapore. Long as Raj Rajaratnam is not caught publicly chewing gum in Singapore, he's pretty well okay. But in Appalachistan, a kid acting on conscience does time next to somebody who maybe, you know, diddled a 5-year-old. Meanwhile, also here in Appalachistan, a man threatens to slit the throat of a man and his son because the man and his son are attending a picnic of peaceniks who want to end mountaintop removal. and the man making the threat is a laid-off Massey worker. He's charged with a misdemeanor, is released on his own recognizance, and after being tried and proven guilty, is literally told to go and sin no more. At a peaceful protest, a woman named Ruth Tucker, a supporter of Massey Energy, crosses over to the peaceful protesters and punches in the head Judy Bonds, who 2 years later would be dead of brain cancer. She's tried. Before trial, she's arrested. She's released on her own recognizance. Tried in the magistrate court. Found guilty. Given a $100 fine and court costs. No jail. And told to go and sin no more. As David wrote earlier today, Bob, help me get back to that "with liberty and justice for all" stuff from 8th grade civics class, would you? I'm having an effing come apart trying to find the virtues in the country as they are currently offered to us by our betters. I need a little relief here, like now. Well, you know, David, it was Jerry Clower who once said, at least one of us is getting some relief. Knock him out, John. Don't care if you hit me or the cat, one of us going to get some relief. Anybody can see that justice, like labor, remember the David Brooks column Sandra referred to last night on the program, where it talked about human capital? Well, what we've got at work here in the admission to bond of Raj Rajaratnam is judicial capital. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. This is conversation radio unlike anything you're likely to find anywhere else. You are welcome to participate in it. In fact, without your participation, it really isn't conversation radio anymore. Any new listeners out there? Anybody who's never worked up the nerve to call the show? You know what? There's never a better time. Never a better time. But the lines are open to any and all, except right-wingers. We don't allow right-wingers on this program. You're banned. Because there's not enough time on Earth. There's not enough time left in the remainder of the universe to waste the little bit of precious time we have here on right-wing filth. But all other persons of good conscience and goodwill are more than welcome. Because that's just how it is. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. An email comes to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you, all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm not a bad person.
I know.
I don't drink and I don't kill. I got no evil habits and I probably never will. I don't sing like Elvis Presley. I can't dance like Fred Astaire. But there's one thing in my favor.
What?
I'm a millionaire.
That's beautiful.
And I got more money than a horse has hairs. From a rich old Uncle Pat. And answered all my prayers. could get myself a nose job. I could diet for a year. But I'll never be Robert Redford, cause I'm much too fond of beer. Please don't misunderstand me. It's not love I'm trying to buy. It's just I got all this here money, and I'm a pretty ugly guy.
Well, I got more money than a horse has hands, cause my rich old uncle died and answered all my prayers. But having all this money is gonna bring me down.
If you ain't with me, honey, to help me spread it around. I don't mind if you love me for my money, if you love me for whatever else I got. But accepting all this stuff, I'm alone in Fortnite. I don't guess I'm doing all that hot.
But I got more money than a horse has hands, cause my rich old uncle died and answered all my prayers. But having all this money is gonna bring me down.
If you ain't with me, honey, to help me.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Global Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Global Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Oh. Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Global Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It's hard to mistake the unmistakable sound of Dr. Hook. But in case you didn't know, that was Dr. Hook and the Millionaire. I thought that just delightfully appropriate for the conversation as it was running at the time. A little reminder, you heard the Bubble Genius ad there. You know, I need to cut an ad, and we need to get a banner up at the website. Badly. Remember, there is a deal out there for you if you order some Bubble Genius stuff from bubblegenius.com, BUBBLEGENIUS. When you get to the checkout, it's promo code. If you just type in the word horny, HORNIE, because that's the name you guys gave yourselves somewhere along the way. I was not involved in the process. I would have blushed. But if you type in the promo code HORNY, you will get 10% of the cost removed from your purchase, and you will get your very own bar of horn soap. Can't buy it down to the Rite Aid. Can't get it over to the Walgreens. They don't even have it at Costco. Only at BubbleGenius.com, and only by using the promo code HORNY can you get a free bar of delightful horn soap with the logo and everything. You know, if it was me and I had a fancy guest bathroom, you know, with the monogram towels that were nobody ever touched or anything, and instead of having those little shell soaps and stuff laying around, I'd have a bucket of Bubble Genius clean coal soap. And right there up on the soap dish, I'd have the horn soap sitting there with that pretty horn logo, just like you see on the website, shining up through. Maybe I'd have to put some sort of low lighting under it just to give it an extra glow. I don't know. But you can have your very own bar when you use promo code HORNY, H-O-R-N-I-E, at bubblegenius.com. And by the way, if you have any plans to make it out to Netroots Nation this year, out in Minneapolis, I'm pretty sure... that the Coal River Mountain Watch table is literally going to be right smack dab next door to the Bubble Genius table, because everybody had so much fun together last year. It rapidly turned into this vast mutual admiration society. Email rolled in from Ron and Raleigh. Something doesn't smell quite right, Bob. You think old Raj Rajaratnam was on somebody's bad side? When they send someone from Goldman Sachs to the Gray Bar Motel, I'll sit up and take notice. Yeah, I've got a feeling he's never going to see the inside of a prison cell either. Because he can eat that $100 million without even trying. But I don't think it was specific with regard to our old buddy Raj. This was a big sting. This was an attempt to curtail the predatory conduct that runs rampant on Wall Street. See, if there was really any justice, everybody busted in this should be forever barred from trading in any way, shape, form, or fashion within the legalized the gambling scheme that is Wall Street. You know, we've got a law here in, it's one strike and you're out. If you get convicted, and bear in mind, it's a misdemeanor, mind you. I mean, we've got our ducks in a row here. There's a law here in West Virginia that says if in the course of hunting you accidentally shoot and kill a cow, a sheep, a pig, or a human being or other livestock, no, really, it reads that way, that you can be imprisoned for this killing up to a year in the county jail, which is now the regional jail, and that you can also be fined, and you can also be forever barred from ever holding a hunting license in West Virginia. Now, it's a misdemeanor, so nobody can take away your right to keep and arm bears or bear arms. But you can be barred forever from hunting in West Virginia. And that is as close to a cultural shunning as this state's government is capable of. Is there any such, anybody familiar with the federal scheme on this? Is there any such thing out there that would suggest that maybe our buddy Raj Rajaratnam could be forever banned from trading in securities anywhere on any exchange for any reason in any market anywhere in the United States of America forever and ever. God bless. Amen. Because, see, that's what needs to happen. But what we have here, to answer Ron's question, I don't think old Raj ran afoul of anybody. I don't think anybody dropped the dime necessarily. So much as it's a matter of Wall Street being so inherently, unutterably, out in the open, crooked, that if anything, it was a matter of pride goeth before a fall. Because, you know, they had 8 years of being able to do as they wanted, loot as they pleased. And for the most part, the Obama administration hasn't exactly been hard-nosed with them. But sometimes it's just a matter of telling the folks in the prosecutor's office it's okay to do your job again. It's kind of like the EPA. I've been looking for some reporting on the really stupid hearing in the House of Representatives today in support of destroying the health and well-being of Appalachia with chief cheerleader Nick Joe Rahal trying to outlove the coal industry ahead of the Repiglickens. You know what? I'd take odds on Nick Joe. I mean, any man will jump out of a daggum airplane to prove how much he loves coal. That man's going to be hard to beat. I mean, he's going to have it down the stretch and ain't afraid to go to the whip. But just telling an agency that they can do their job again is enough to raise the ire of the right wing and the moneyed interest and the various corporate cabals. The United Mine Workers of America, for instance. That union about which so many of us can get so romantically obsessed because of the heroism of days and generations that are long gone and dead in the grave. The United Mine Workers of America bellyaches and pisses and moans about how the EPA's keeping us from mining coal in West Virginia. And says that the EPA's taking away West Virginia jobs. When all the EPA has done is try to slow the flood tide of disaster and destruction that is the handmaiden of the coal industry. Yeah, it's gotten to the point where the UMWA is basically just a captive, it's a captive union to the few companies that will still do business with them. The UMWA got broken years ago by Peabody, Consol, Pittston. Some Consol mines maybe are still union. But Massey and Nanette would know better which ones broke the UMWA. But they're a captive to the coal industry. And they argue as loudly as any given coal company for the right to continue blowing up Appalachia as long as it's providing jobs. You know how to spell that, don't you? J-A-W-B-Z, jobs. Them, as in, them tree huggers is coming to get your jobs. So I think Raj Rajaratnam was merely a victim of his own hubris. That's my guess. Just saying. But there is a lot of stuff out there for a good prayer meeting Wednesday. I found this one particularly interesting because it's one of those where you got to give credit. You got to give credit to people for responding to what might actually be the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer. Now, you know that Speaker of the House, John Boehner, is very vociferous about what a fine, upstanding, good Catholic he is. In fact, this weekend, he's giving the commencement address at the Catholic University of America in D.C. Apparently, that's not going over very well with some Catholic university scholars who actually sit around doing things like studying what Yeshua taught about how we treat the poor. Because really, if you get right down to brass tacks and you go wandering around through Matthew, Mark, and Luke, I don't have much for John. But if you go wandering around through Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you'll find that Yeshua was quite unequivocal on the poor, the downtrodden, the hopeless, the homeless. He made it clear that that how you treat them has a lot to do with how our Father which art in heaven, as the wording goes, thinks about you. And with regard to that, now, and bear in mind, the things that the John Boehner Catholics of the world like most, like making sure we protect traditional marriage, well, there's just, I mean, we talked about it a little bit ago, there's just not a hell of a lot inside the New Testament, well, at least the parts that Yeshua had a hand in. I'm not counting that psychopath Paul. Okay, sociopath. Okay, so he was just driven crazy huffing tent fumes. He was a tent merchant, remember? But there's just not a lot in the actual words of Yeshua about blessed are the rich, or blessed are the supply-side economists, or blessed are the protectors of defenders of traditional merge, or blessed are they who persecute the homos. It's just not there. I mean, you can spend all day. It's not there. By the way, I'm still frustrated, not that I could afford it, but I am still frustrated in my attempt to get a hold of Bart Ehrman's new book. You remember Bart was on the show several years ago about his book, Misquoting Jesus. That would have been around 2006, I think. Well, he's got a new book out, and it's brilliant. A lot of good stuff being written about it. It's called Forged. And he explains very patiently why many of the books of the New Testament are actual frauds, forgeries, not really what they claim to be, you know, that kind of thing. Like a bunch of Paul's letters. How you can put out a book in 2011 and not produce a Kindle version is lost on me. I just don't know. But anyway, back to the Catholic University of Washington, D.C. Dozens of members of the faculty of Catholic universities all over the country are signing off on letters to John Boehner. In this letter they write, Mr. Speaker, your voting record is at variance from one of the Church's most ancient moral teachings of caring for the poor. Your record in support of legislation to address the desperate needs of the poor is among the worst in Congress. This fundamental concern should have great urgency for Catholic policymakers, yet even now you work in opposition to it. The 2012 budget you shepherded to passage in the House of Representatives guts long established protections for the most vulnerable members of society. It is particularly cruel to pregnant women and children. Oh, look, right to life, anybody? Gutting maternal and child health grants and slashing $500 million from the highly successful Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, WIC. When they graduate from WIC at age 5, these children will face a 20% cut in food stamps. The House budget radically cuts Medicaid and effectively ends Medicare. It invokes the deficit to justify visiting such hardship upon the vulnerable, while it carves out 3 trillion new tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy. Even the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops got in on the act, and it's cited in the letter from the professors. The bishops wrote, "Converting Medicare into a voucher program could shift rising health care costs to vulnerable seniors and those who are poor without controlling these costs. We also fear the human and social costs of substantial cuts to programs that serve families working to escape poverty, especially food and nutrition, child development and education, and affordable housing." Even the Vatican says the responsibility for attaining the common good, besides the responsibility for attaining the common good, besides falling to individual persons, belongs also to the state. Tax revenues and public spending take on crucial economic importance. This, according to a Vatican guidance, just, efficient, and effective public financing will have very positive effects. I give credit when credit's due, and credit is due here. In a press release, Stephen Schneck, it's name night on the horn. In a press release, Stephen Schneck, who's director of the Institute for Policy Research and Catholic Studies at Catholic University, one of the people who signed the letter, he said Speaker Boehner's budget boners eviscerated by a boner. Now there's an image. Speaker Boehner's budget eviscerates vital programs that protect the poor, the elderly, the homeless, and at-risk pregnant women and children. This is not pro-life. The point being, that John Boehner, Boehner, has about as much moral right to make that address as Colonel Sanders does to say he's pro-chicken. Really. But it's moments like this, and you know, it still exists in Catholic Church law. Wait a minute! They've got Catholic Church law. Is that anything like Sharia? Yeah, but it's not Muslim. Okay. The concept of excommunication still exists in Catholic Church canon law. Now, I don't know if it's still all fancy with lots of fun costumes and broken candles and things like that, but it still carries the same effects. Can't be buried in consecrated grounds. You're supposed to be shunned by other followers of the faith, that sort of thing. And the Catholic Church has not hesitated to excommunicate, for instance, a nun who helped a suffering woman, helped save the life of a suffering woman who was about to be killed by her own pregnancy. Excommunication was trotted right out and deemed appropriate. And the Roman Catholic Church reads at least a similar version to the same Bible that I was raised reading. And it still has the verse in it about, if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me, and if you've not done it unto the least of these, you've not done it also unto me. And that's not Pauline, baby. That is Jesus talking. And again, it's unequivocal. So to my Roman Catholic brothers and sisters out there, I urge a letter-writing campaign to the Pope, to whatever cardinal comes in handy, bishops, monsignors, priests, friars, monks, Dominican, Franciscan, I don't care. Find one and grab him by the collar and say, if this church is to remain any sort of moral, retain any sort of moral relevance, you gotta excommunicate John Boner. Because failing to adhere to the strict admonishments of Yeshua, you know, Christ Jesus, well, if that can't get you chucked, what can? Because Jesus never said anything about abortion. But he said for damn sure that if you've not done it unto the least of these, you've not done it also unto me. And see, there's John Boner out there not doing it unto the least of these. And by not doing it, I mean not providing health care, not feeding, not visiting the sick, not visiting the imprisoned, not clothing the naked, not housing the homeless. He's doing the exact polar opposite of everything I just said because he does not worship Jesus Christ or God or the Holy Spirit. Spiritus Sanctus. He worships Mammon, and Mammon is a demon. And frankly, I would think that any self-respecting church would want demon worshipers out of its congregation. This one's easy. This one has no moral relativism to it whatsoever. Excommunicate this dirty bastard. Explain to him that as long as he continues to defecate upon the poor and the suffering in this country, that he has no place for his bones to lie in sanctified ground. Excommunicate him. Let him be shunned by every congregation of upstanding Roman Catholics in this country. Excommunicate him for the sins that he persists in committing on a daily basis. Against those about whom Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God, was most concerned. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, so I'm pulling for Herman Cain. That's my man. That's what I want to see.
I read that, isn't it? Oh, that's beautiful.
And he has a video already out. He got all them folks with white people mesmerized. Because they already had one Negro, so they can just jump the shark and might as well go with this one. But apparently he was pronounced winner of that hideous debate.
But he's not polling as well as, Mike Huckabee.
Oh, shit, he can't pass him yet.
No.
Anyway, it's just kind of a nightmare. I was listening to what he was saying. It's just like, oh, no. But he does seem to have a little bit more sense than that West guy.
Oh, he's Alan West.
Yes. I mean, the Godfather pizza. I'm trying to think, have I ever eaten that? Maybe I'm in the wrong part of the country. Anyway.
There used to be a chain of restaurants, but now it's sort of degenerated into frozen pizza frozen pizzas that get sold in gas stations.
Oh, right. The thing about the billionaire that got done, I suppose that, you know, they really did have to parade somebody up there because, I think the natives are getting restless with, like, no convictions, nothing. Apparently that attorney has a pretty long string of them, but are any of them going inside, though?
And that's what I couldn't find out from the New York Times reportage.
Yeah,
I mean, they got 21 out of 25 guilty pleas out of the group that was playing footsie with Raj Rajaratnam.
Yeah, I know, the other people, but are they inside? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, this is I appreciate that there's some, you know, people being charged and tried. But, you know, I'd like to see some numbers because even Ronald Reagan was able to put 1,000 of them people away, you know? Like, they actually served jail time.
Yeah, Michael Milken and the lot.
Yeah, you know, a whole thousand of them. And that SNL was like peanuts compared to, you know, what these people have gotten away with. But, I mean, listen, I'm just glad to see anything. I hope it turns into a bit of a snowball, you know.
Well, me too. And I'd like for it to drill down into the, like you mentioned, into the entire culture.
Well, because, no, that's, you know, that is like the only way to sort of get a hold of, you know, the whole law, the rule of law. It has to start somewhere because it just seems to be really out of control.
It's, that's the whole point, is that I don't know if there's any way to get at, you know, really get at the heart of the system. But B.J. Kang, who is the FBI special agent in charge of the investigation, said he was happy for justice. And you know what? There was a trial here, so we can really call it justice. But 47 people have been tried, charged with insider trading. Raj Rajaratnam is the 35th conviction. Now, with all those convictions, maybe it's just because I'm not watching this story just bubbled up into my consciousness, but where are the stories about, you know, the guys doing the perp walk and heading off to the minimum security federal prison, you know? Because these guys aren't going to do Leavenworth time.
Well, no, it's also like, you know, that's why you have to laugh out loud when you hear, well, what kind of bond are you going to even mention? I mean, you know, nothing's going to hurt that fool unless it was like $800 million. The bond. You know what I'm saying?
Right. This couldn't touch you. I mean, really, do I have my math right? If you're worth $1.3 billion, can you just eat $100 million and skip?
Yeah, of course you can. I mean, you can eat, and to be honest, you can eat a half a billion, but it's not about amount with these people. If you read that article, this guy was just some kind of totally obnoxious, you know, hyper-competitive.
Yeah, he's a big sports fan, and he's upset that he didn't win the trial because he's very competitive.
Yeah, everything's a bit of a game, you know. I think once you get to that level of wealth, so.
I mean, did you read about the 50th birthday party, Sandra?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, one of the things that came out at trial is that for Raj Rajaratnam's 50th birthday, he flew dozens of family and friends for a safari in Kenya. You know, where they went and shot things.
Yeah, well. No, I mean, at that, you know, it's just, the thing is that these rich people, you know, since all of this has been in the forefront because of how they wreck the economy, you find out that, well, you know, there's really not much bootstrapping going on amongst them people.
No.
And, you know, and I can shift over to that thing I sent to you about, Japan, which kind of like totally.
Oh man, I watched those videos, Sandra, and anybody listening needs to go see these things. I'm looking for the link now, just so I can give the website. What was it? Nuclear Ginza,
yeah,
was the section of the website itself.
But. The thing is that if you think about the Japanese culture, you know, it's a collectivist culture, but it's very hierarchical. So if you are at the top, you're completely coddled, you know, in the corporations, at the universities. If you get in there, they keep it so there's discourse. I mean, it's not any disunity. But as you go further down the society, it gets more competitive and more desperate. Until you get to these contract people, you know, and it's just kind of like, oh, God. And I didn't realize that they didn't end their sort of feudal stigmas until 1871.
That's a stop. Right. With a real live, honest to God caste system.
Right. So when you think about, I mean, you know, that's the same type of period for us with slavery. So, I mean, it's not all that long ago. And so I don't know why I didn't, you know, I didn't. It's just that video was from 1995. And I'm like, yikes. Now they're dealing with something even more out of control. So when we hear about all those heroic workers, oh no, they got to have so many of these people now, Bob, because they can't keep people in there for that long. So I just shudder to think at what's going on in that country right now.
It's frightening.
It's really frightening because, you know, we're not talking about hard-ass work now. We're talking about, you know, death and just a horrible existence of radiation sickness and scorn and ostracism, right? I mean, yikes. But anyway, I'd recommend people check that out. You know, it's kind of a while back, but geez.
Yeah, because the documentary is from 1995, but it's BBC work. And the backgrounder on it is that it's it was done by a photographer who learned, and he's a Japanese photographer, and he learned about this subsection of Japanese culture that he didn't even know existed.
He didn't know. This is the thing, you know, when I was watching it, you know, I'm thinking, well, you know, it was just sort of, I don't know, I'm just sort of...
Yeah, now, I'm going to mangle the word, but the word for these untouchables who are... sort of callously sent into these nuclear facilities is Barakamon?
Yeah, something like that. It's, yeah, Barukami. Anyway, and the whole film of the sort of labor bosses, I thought that was interesting, and the sort of mafia that sort of mandates where these people work and how some of the labor unions were trying to educate the workers to stay away from the nuclear reactors, but as they get older, they had to, you know, more of them started working there again. So, and this was in 95, so who knows?
Yeah.
What kind of horrible system.
There's nothing to indicate that anything changed between 1995 and now, and there was that particular...
Except for more and older
right.
systems. Yeah.
And greater senses of desperation. The website is japansubculture.com, japansubculture.com, and just look for Nuclear Ginza, G-I-N-Z-A. There's an account in there of a man who sued saying that, you know, he should have been warned or something, you know, he was entitled to some sort of information about the danger of what he was engaging in, and it went right up to... It went right up to the top, and they said nope. And the conclusion drawn is, well, maybe it's because there's so, you know, all of these corporations
powerful.
Yeah, are so powerful and so tied in, and you know it gives you pause because there's occasional footage in the film, Sandra, of something that we've become accustomed to when seeing visions of, say, Tokyo, and it's these giant electronic billboards.
Yeah.
You know, huge, you know, building-sized faces and so forth.
Something out of Blade Runner, right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's what the electricity generated at these nuclear nightmares was being used for. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of moms and pops out there keeping the lights on or running the computer or the washing machine, perhaps, the TV. But, you know, think about and it's conspicuous consumption because it serves no purpose other than, you know, the further commercialization of the public space.
Yeah, and also if you tie that into the sort of tendency of that culture to want to be autonomous, you know, it explains why they have, what is it, 45% nuclear capacity, you know, because... Who wants to be dealing with the oil shocks of the 70s, on and on and on? But the price seems really high. And that email you sent me talking about the private-public partnerships, yeah, just in general, government can either be on the side of corporations or the side of people.
And there's really no possibility of doing both.
I mean, both, because... it's horrific.
Well, it's kind of biblical because, you know, the book says a man may not serve two masters. Well, it goes double for governments. You can't serve business and serve the people at the same time.
Well, that's why it was so interesting, the kind of the paradigm of the New Deal and FDR because, you know, he was walking a severely fine line to the point where they wanted to do a coup on his ass because he was quite publicly siding with the folks. Be it perception somewhat, he still was making that effort. Whereas here on this side right now, we don't have that. We have a president who's trying to walk and work with these people and try to sell it back to us as a possibility.
And how do you...
And the thing about FDR was because he took advantage of a trauma and turned it towards helping as many people as possible, as opposed to taking the trauma and making it worse for the vast majority. I hate to make it that.
And for that he was called. And for that he was literally called a traitor to his class.
Right, but he said, "I welcome their hatred." You never forget that rhetoric. Oh my God, you know what I'm saying? I don't really care. I know Roosevelt had his flaws, and he was saving capitalism. Blah 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 blah. But I never forget that rhetoric, okay? That's some strong shit.
Yeah, to say...
you know?
Well, you know, has anybody had that kind of nerve since?
Well, you know, I kind of appreciate Truman's rhetoric. He had his moments.
Well, that's very true. Witness that quote from last night about, you know, trying the Nazi war criminals.
Yeah, but I'm just saying... And so when you think about a system like Japan where they have a saying that basically a people who stand out needs to be hammered down. I mean, that's, you see what I mean? You just don't do it. It's just not on.
Right, because it's kind of what our buddy Robert in Japan pointed to. There is a mindset there that the community good is far more important than the personal good.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just the standard. I mean, that's just how the system operates. And I'm not, you know, being critical of it per se, but when you see major deviations, like when the head of one of their nuclear regulatory people resigned publicly, that's a huge deal there. I mean, that's a major deal. So.
Yeah, that's right, because under those circumstances, he resigns and goes home and kills himself, right? I mean,
well,
that's the way it would have worked in a former setting.
Right, but the fact that, the situation is so out of hand that you have people needing to make a statement like that just tells you just how dire the situation is. Anyway, I don't know. I just, that's my sort of, I always have to keep my eye out on that disaster because it hasn't come to an end, you see. It's still going on.
Yeah, and, you know, it points out, that term is used in the film, nuclear Ginza, because it's like a massive mall of nuclear reactors along the seashore. And I don't know if you saw or not, but now, you know, they're going to take proactive measures, and they're going to build a 40-foot seawall. Well, okay, great, but wouldn't it be better if they built a 100-foot seawall?
Seawall, is this part of, I mean, at the...
At one of the other nuclear complexes.
Well, see, the problem is, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of freaky. They keep talking about different leaks they're still finding, and then there's the table water. You know, I just think the whole thing is already...
Right, and going back to this video, it's 1995, and these guys are talking about going in and mopping up radioactive water.
Right, that was the thing that stuck out to me too. I thought, oh no! And then he was talking about how the measuring device went off the scale.
Yeah, he said it would be at zero when he went in, and he'd come out, and depending on how long you're in there, you know, anywhere from an hour to 2 hours, the meter would have risen by, what did he say, 30 to 50 millimeters.
And then it went off. Then it went off the. Then the needle went off the whole scale. Followed by him showing us his teeth. Yeah, it's a pretty outrageous piece of film that I would recommend people checking out. I was sort of kind of shocked.
Well, especially when you see that, you know, that date, 1995. That's
right.
16 years ago.
Yeah, so, yikes. Keep it short. The only other thing I wanted to mention was, you know, the senators grill AT&T and T-Mobile on the merger, and they're talking about, you know, Al Franken, one of the strongest antitrust. And then the article ends with, oh, but there's no plans to stop or say no to the merger.
No, just gonna say a lot of bad stuff. See, look how strong, look how, yeah.
So I'm so over. See, I think more and more people are just sort of over that. It's like, yeah, whatever, Mr. Franken. I don't care. What does it mean if the merger as detrimental as that on our way to a psychedelic cable, which is what the World Wide Web is going to become? Leave it to these people. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Anyway, that's
well,
the only other thing.
Well, before you go, do we have long enough for a moment of mutual shallowness?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Have you seen the firestorm over the fact that the Obamas have invited Common?
Well, I saw that, but you know, I have to say, I'm embarrassed. I mean, who's this? It's a rapper, right?
Yeah.
And so, and it's a rapper that do the girls like the rappers? His girls.
I guess I don't know. It's but he's actually invited for a celebration of American poetry.
Right. Okay. So it's not like he's talking about hoes and bitches, right?
Right. He's not going to come and do the whole West Coast, East Coast, you know, gang. But dude wears a bow tie. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I figured when I saw that
He wears what my military buddies once referred to as BCD glasses. You know, the thick, black, nerdy... BCD stands for birth control device. Because no woman will get near a guy wearing these things.
Right. And so, basically, it's a benign musician, right?
Right. But, see, there's a problem, though. He wrote a song against the Iraq War called A Letter to the Law. Once upon a time, and in the song there is a line that says, "Burn a bush, 'cause for peace he no push no button." and Karl Rove and Sean Hannity came near having a baby on air. Well, see, he's talking about wanting to burn down George Bush. It's you know it's similar to. The ugly little crap hemorrhage that the right wing and some on our side had over that little bit of satire that Malloy offered about SEAL Team 6 and George Bush.
Well, no, I mean, it's the whole problem with that is the denial of what Bush is. But hello, had Obama not been looking forward, you see what I'm saying? So, I mean, we keep hitting against the lack of accountability. So, of course, the Sean Hannitys of the world are going to say, oh, how dare you denigrate a president.
Oh, it was a beautiful thing because Karl Rove was on there, and he said, President Obama said last week he wanted to recapture that special moment after 9/11, and here a week later, we have an example of how this White House thinks it can recapture that moment by inviting a thug to the White House, a man who called for the death of Mr. Obama's predecessor in office. This guy is a thug.
Oh, God, he's, Rove is a thug. Are you kidding me?
Right. I mean, all of these, you know, John Stewart did a bit that was actually quite funny called, Bush's 11 or something like that, about the 11, Bush administration people who were called out to make sure that we all remembered that George Bush was partially responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, by God.
Oh, no, that, yeah, I mean...
And every last one of them, every last one of them has so much blood on their hands they can't do their morning constitutionals in the bathroom, you know?
Right. No, not only that, but I mean the sort of dog whistle, you know, racial. It's just nonstop with these white people, you know, thugs and any urban and any kind
urban
of reference, you know, with and it's just like, I mean, enough already. I think everyone knows on the planet that Obama is black. They don't seem to be able to get past that in any way, these people.
And it's the fact that they can't, that it's, you know, it's
hard. No, but it's pretty it's neurotic and just so irrational at this point. I don't even know what to think. And I don't know if we can we take another 4 years of Obama? Is the country going to fracture? He might get his Lincoln moment for real, huh?
Oh. And see, that's the thing. They have these hemorrhages over satirical statements. I mean, you know, this wasn't cop killer, okay? This was just saying burn a bush because he no push, no peace button.
Oh, it wasn't colors, huh? Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, this is, it's tepid, to say the least. But, of course, I remembered, when I saw this story, Sandra, I remembered when a man went to prison during the first Bush administration, the first W administration. He went to prison because he told a joke in a bar about a burning bush. It was a play on words. Dude went to prison.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny because I remember playing, there was a great Earth, Wind & Fire song talking about a burning bush. I can't remember the name anyway. Wow, no, I don't remember that. That's
yeah.
What do they want Obama to do? To prostrate himself about this kid, this rapper? I'm confused.
You know what he should probably do is resign.
Okay, right, there we go.
Because
the thing about it, which I have my issues with it, but it's beyond funny. Is how these white people's heads are exploding because this man actually killed or took out this Bin Laden. I think that's another one that's going to drive them over the bin. Anyway, I don't know.
Okay, I was going to play the song, Sandra, but I can't find it.
Oh, okay.
That's, you know, that's it. When you can't buy it on Amazon for 99 cents, you know. Okay. Dem boy wanna talk. What you gonna do if you got one gun? I sing a song for the hero unsung with faces on the mural of the revolution. No looking back, cause in back is what's done. Tell the preacher God got more than one son. Tell the law my Uzi weighs a ton. I walk like a warrior. From them I won't run. On the streets they try to beat us like a drum. In Cincinnati, another brother hung. A guinea won't see the sun with his family stung. They want us to hold justice, but you handed me none. The same they did to Kobe and Michael Jackson make them the main attraction. Turn around and attack them. Black gem in the rough, you're rugged enough. Use your mind and nine power, get the government touch. Them boys chat on him on how him pop gun. I got the black strap to make the cops run. They watching me, I'm watching them. Them dick boys got a lock of cock in them. My boy on the block got a lot of poke in them. And when we roll together, we be rocking them to sleep. No time for that because there's things to be done. Stay true to what I do so the youth dream come. From project building, see a fiend being hung. With that happening, why they messing with Saddam? Burn a bush, cause for peace he no push, no button. Killing over oil and grease, no weapons of destruction. How can we follow a leader when this a corrupt one? The government's a G-unit, and they might buck young black people in the urban area one. I hold up a peace sign, but I carry a gun. Peace, y'all.
Well, tell me something. Was it something he said that wasn't true?
No, because everything, that sounds pretty much straight up.
I mean, I'm like, let me go out and quickly drop a dollar for the song. Shit, that sounds pretty good to me.
Well, you ain't going to find it at Amazon.
Well, anyway, but no, you know, listen, so what? So what? Please tell me, Obama, is he making public apologies about it already? Or?
He hasn't surrendered yet.
Oh, so it's a countdown? I'm so bad. Hopefully he'll stay strong. Stay strong.
Right. Let's see. Update. Today, you got to do your Richard Pryor doing a white guy voice for this. Today, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said that while Obama opposes some of Common's lyrics, he is still standing by his invitation of the rapper. He's known as a socially conscious hip-hop artist or rapper, who in fact has done a lot of good things, offered Carney. You can oppose some of what he's done and appreciate some of the other things he's done.
In the meanwhile, drones and assassinations worldwide. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. You know, there's that.
I'm so over the sort of, you know, people getting all with their panties in a bunch over this kind of dribble.
But it's another one of those, hey, Muriel, I just found something out. The president's black.
Oh, you know, and by the way, rap music sometimes talks about the human condition. You know? What the hell?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, so I just, you know, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to think about the upcoming presidential race, but the Republican field, it looks hecka weak.
It's, well, early on, Mike Huckabee's in the lead, and he's got a 1-point lead over, maybe Mitt Romney.
No, but see, that horrible Newt Gingrich has thrown...
Oh, he's announced, and he's at 8%. The best line I saw about that all day long was, I retweeted some guy earlier today who said, poor Callista. Now Newt's thrown his hat in the Prez ring, he'll probably feel another surge of patriotism and go have him a patriotic affair. Because remember, that's what he explained back when he had his last fling with Callista. A couple of months ago, he said, sometimes I get so overwhelmed by my patriotism that I just do things that I ought not do.
Well,
because I love America.
No, but it's just, I mean, the whole thing about Newt Gingrich is just so weird. It's like, he's about the only, you know, white dude that we get to hear is always banging somebody. You know, most of them fools are completely strictly asexual, and it's just kind of like, do I really want to see Newt Gingrich out there flubbing around talking about why he's banging different women and how it relates to his serving the country? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's
how is he running? Good night.
What? But if there's a good thing to be had out of this, Donald Trump is dropping like a paralyzed falcon. It's over.
Well, yeah, he's over. That's, I mean, listen, he was just, I don't know what to say. That boy got, wow.
Oh, and by the way, Ron and Raleigh just updated. Common is a friend of Michelle's, and he's been a friend of Michelle's for years.
Oh, okay. So it's yeah. Well, no matter what they do, though, that's just how it is, really. I just don't want him to, you know, less caving when these sort of cultural issues pop up. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, this young man does not deserve to be sent off to the Jeremiah Wright Memorial Gulag.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And you remember how contrived it was when they released some commentary from Obama when he called Kanye West an ass.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I don't want any more of that. I don't, you, can we not? But, yeah, anyway, I'll keep my eye on that one.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, when you ring off here, I've found what may be this guy doing this piece.
Okay.
Because he can do it, he can give it a lot more justice than I can.
Okay, I'll let you go. Have a good evening.
All right, see you, Sandra. Bye now. You know, from our perspective, this is just dumb. This is the Republican Party is comprised apparently entirely of the freaky strapped down John Lithgow character. Was it John Lithgow in Footloose? Just uptight, strapped down, hung up. And that's the whole Republic. You know, this rap music really bothers me, Muriel. Those Negroes, I don't understand their music anymore. You know, God, this is the same bunch that burnt you. I don't want little Susie Ellen listening to none of that race music out of that there Sam Phillips' son record studio down there in Memphis. because, you know, that's the jungle music. Even if it's being sung by white people, they're just singing that jungle music. And the next thing you know, terrible things will happen. That's Satan's recording studio, that Sun Records down there in Memphis. Let's see if this is what I think it is. It's from Deaf Poetry.
One of my heroes, my companion. What more can I say about this brother? Without further ado, shenanigans from me, Deaf Poetry, New York City, give it up for my man, Common.
Oh, no, I hear some of that funky wah-wah guitar. This can't be no good.
Them boy want to talk like them want to Guantanamo. But what you gonna do if you got one gun? I sing a song for the hero unsung, with faces on the mirror of the revolution. No looking back, cause in back is what's done. Tell the preacher, God got more than one son. Tell the law, my Uzi weighs a ton. I walk like a warrior, from them I won't run. On the streets they try to beat us like a drum. In Cincinnati, another brother hung. Again, he won't see the sun with his family stung. They want us to hold justice, but you handed me none. The same they did to Kobe and Michael Jackson. Make them the main attraction, turn around and attack them. Black Jim in the rough, you're rugged enough. Use your mind and mind power, get the government touch. Them boy chat on how him pop gun. I got the black strap to make the cops run. They watching me, I'm watching them. Them dick boys got a lot of cock in them. My people on the block got a lot of pock in them. And when we roll together, we be rocking them to sleep. No time for that, cause it's things to be done. Stay true to what I do so the youth dream come. From project building, seen a fiend being hung. With that happening, why they messing with Saddam? Burn a bush, cuss for peace, he no push no button. Killing over oil and grease, no weapons of destruction. How can we follow leader when it's a corrupt one? The government's a G-unit and they might buck young. Black people in the urban area one. I hold up a peace sign, but I carry a gun. Peace, y'all. Love.
Yeah, right. Because, see, there's something at work here. And you know that the best comedy is good because it is a reflection of larger realities. And, well, there's this. The reaction of the right wing to Common, and you just heard what it is that's got their maiden forms in a twist. The reaction to Common comes from this place that says that white people insist upon ownership not only, they haven't let go. A lot of white people, especially a lot of Republicans, still, somewhere down in that dark, scaly, little, filthy, spider-webby, snail-traily place that passes for their soul, a lot of white folks still maintain some sort of sick, hidden, proprietary interest in black folks. Right down to their art. Especially their art. You know, white folks haven't really come up with a viable art form, with the exception of what came out of the Appalachian Mountains with Mother Maybelle Carter. White folks haven't come up with an art form since the Minuet and the Virginia Reel. And I can tell you, those are some hoedown good times, those Minuets and Virginia Reels. Yeehaw. Because those formalistic, stylized expressions are born of an inherently repressive culture. When, on the other hand, you have a culture that has been repressed and oppressed and has nothing left to lose except to express. And upon the dare to express, whether it be pants too long or not high enough on the waist, or that rap music, white folks will get all worked up. And Mel Brooks knew this.
Spirit, I don't hear no singing. When you were slaves, you sang like birds. Come on, how about a good old nigger work song?
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a belt out of you? Some get a kick from cocaine.
Hold it, hold it! What the hell is that shit? I meant a song. A real song. Something like, swing low, sweet chariot.
Swing low, chariot.
Don't know that one, huh? Well, how about Decamp Town Ladies?
Decamp Town Ladies.
Decamp Town Ladies.
Oh, you know. Decamp Town Ladies, sing this song. Doo-dah, doo-dah. Decamp Town Racetrack, 5 miles long. All the doo-dah day.
In the wide, wide world of sports is going on here. I had you people try to get a little track lead, not to jump around like a bunch of Kansas City faggots.
Sorry, Mr. Taylor.
You get the idea. I love that scene. I love that scene to pieces. And there's about, and you know, when you start explaining humor, you start losing. But just if you, in case you, just in case you go and look at the clip again, when the white idiots began trying to, you know, appropriate the art form and singing Decamp Town Races, then there's about a 2-second cutaway shot to the black folks sitting there looking at them like they plumb lost their minds. And it's a beautiful thing. Because it's a little microcosmic commentary on the predilection for white folks to appropriate other ethnic art forms and take it for their own. Because so much of white culture is so barren, so utterly bereft, so dead, so instant mashed potatoes. But don't worry, if there are white folks' art forms, most of them don't come out of Tony salons. They come, as all art does, out of hardship, agony, oppression, and the urge for expression. That's where the music that came out of Appalachia and became country music came from. in some ways, music carried over from Scotland and Ireland and stories of other oppression. With regard to Newt Gingrich, Jim just wrote in, everybody but him is a Nazi. Don't forget this. Believe that. Well, I'm not sure. Right. And I, if I understand Jim correctly, he's speaking from Gingrich's viewpoint. Everybody's a Nazi but him. Or I could have it backwards. I don't know. Ron and Raleigh, apparently, this segment spoke to him. My favorite description of black music. During the 50s, I once heard a white man describe rhythm and blues as a song by Elvis, that heathen nigger bop. I hate that word. I hate that word. I don't even like to utter that word, but I will in these circumstances, because you know, it's a quote. And that is how white people talk to this day. I'm telling tales out of school, but, you know, this is the world we live in. Agnes was telling me earlier today about a conversation she had with a nameless person about the eighth grade trip coming up. And the mama that Agnes was talking to said, well, we're putting this thing together. I just want to make sure none of them nigger children come. 2011! It's 2011, and the police chief of Fayetteville, West Virginia, America's smallest cool town, or coolest small town, the police chief of Fayetteville, West Virginia, has a swastika tattoo on his forearm. David in South Carolina reminding, you know, Whoopi Goldberg lost a Slim Fast ad contract for criticizing Bush, too. Wonder what Toby Keith's singing, since it wasn't Bush who got Bin Laden and he wasn't gotten with boots in the ass. He got bullets in the eye and chest instead. Keith sang at the Bush White House a few times, you might recall. Oh, hell yeah, and Bush put Lee Greenwood? On the National Council for the Humanities or the Arts or some such other... Lee Greenwood. I'm proud to be an American. And now you know that Lady Gaga has introduced a song about immigration, or at least she says it's a song about immigration. And she introduced it in a concert in Mexico City. And she said, I can't stand some of my country's immigration policies and laws. Something like that. And I'm just wondering if the right wing still has enough power to Dixie chick her. With regard to American music, William just wrote in and said, man, you're right on it. Ron and Raleigh again. Oh, Lord, Bob. You want me to shoot that dead, Mr. Taggart? Would that pep you up some? That's why you have to hide this stuff behind comedy. Because then it's safe to make fun of these sick freaks. And Sandra... Sandra went and did some quick research. This is precious. Headline over at the Raw Story, Fox News accidentally debunks its own attacks on vile rapper Common. Fox Nation's website, editorial site, published an article, Michelle Obama hosting vile rapper at the White House? Vile. Unfortunately, a few months before... an interviewer on Fox News by the name of Jason Robinson had actually interviewed Common and said, he's very positive. He's very positive. You're known as the conscious rapper, Robinson said. Common responded that being an artist is a significant role. Sean Hannity still having a fit that that Andy Williams is not playing at the White House instead of Common. Said, I support his right, but don't bring him to the White House. Where have we heard that before? Well, don't let him sit at the lunch counter! God! Of course, the same sort of standard does not apply to right-wing freaks. It was back in 2000 when Ted Nugent, who refused to change his clothes for two solid weeks and urinated and defecated on himself so as to avoid service in the Vietnam War. It was in 2007 that Ted Nugent was on stage and suggested that then-candidate Barack Obama suck on a machine gun and called him a piece of shit. Shortly thereafter, Bob Beckel asked Hannity about Nugent's remarks and asked Hannity if he was prepared to disavow this lowlife. And Hannity said, well, Ted Nugent is a friend, and I like Ted Nugent. See, there's always a double standard. There's a standard in this country for white folks, and there's a standard in this country for dark-skinned folks. And the line itself is very bright. By the way, that story I related to you about Agnes and what she heard, one of the children she was referring to is of mixed race. So I guess I have to report to you that here in wild, wonderful, West by God, almost level West Virginia, the one-drop rule is still in full force and effect. Just sickening. Ron! Bob, you sure that swastika tattoo isn't an old Vedic symbol for good luck? You know, the Nazis stole it. White culture from Sandra. What about bluegrass music? Well, that bluegrass gets born, and I will defer to David in Tennessee for further expertise on this. Bluegrass gets born out of the same impulse that brings Mother Maybelle down out of the Appalachians. But bluegrass gets born in the early part of the 20th century, largely by midwifed by Bill Monroe, and takes off from there. So, but you know, the same essential impulse. David, I'm sure, will set the record straight in a minute or two. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I guess I was conjured over this Common thing.
I actually kind of did, because I was thinking of you, because you're sort of tapped into the genre far more so than I am.
Well, let me tell you what this is about for people listening now. This was a coordinated attack, and they wanted to bring Common, and that was, see, the right wing is slicker than anyone realizes, because what they wanted to do was they wanted to bring Common, they wanted him to have a press photo, then they were going to release, I already saw the lead-up story to it. They had already brought together that he had made a song on his album, Like Water for Chocolate, called Song for Asada, based on Asada Shakur, who shot a trooper, and then she fled to Cuba. And he made a song for her. And, I mean, they had that story ready to go, and they had already had the New Jersey police. They were frowning upon his going to the White House. And just to put a footnote of how the Republicans are able to do this kind of thing, it worked, because Michelle Obama did not announce Common's name at the poetry tonight. You can go look that up. She didn't announce his name.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I think someone was reporting that he was AWOL. But here's the important thing about all of this, Bob. This is the hypocrisy. We don't need to go to Ted Nugent. We don't see, ladies and gentlemen, what you don't understand is, Bob, the Republicans were pioneers. They were pioneers because back in the 1990s, they loved themselves some gangster rap. They did, Bob. They did. You're not going to believe this.
Say what?
They loved themselves some gangster rap. In fact, Bob, one person was invited to the White House in the 90s that seems that Karl Rove has forgot. It was by the name of a fellow, and you can look this up.
If you say Vanilla Ice, I'm going to have a fit.
No, by a guy named Eazy-E, who was in a group
called
NWA, standing for
With Attitude.
Yes, and the funniest thing about it, Eazy-E was a drug dealer who funded his label called what? Ruthless Records, and he was invited to the White House because he was a Republican, but he had donated to inner city charities, and the White House loved the fact that he was a black Republican.
No, stop it.
I am not kidding, Bob. And
so in other words, let's see if we can build a rule out of this.
He went to the White House in a black leather suit, and nobody said a word. And he actually...
Well, you know, that's how those people dress.
No, he wanted to be this. He wanted to be stylish. And he was a fan of Bush Sr., this is true, because he loved Desert Storm. So you see, it correlates, Bob. They like the gangsters, they like the guns, they like the wars, and they like the drugs. 1, 2, 3, it all connects together. They were the first. So if anyone ever brings that up, people, if anyone ever brings that up, you remind them to tell them that the first gangster rapper at the White House was invited by Republicans, Bush Sr., and that whole cabal, because they loved the fact that he was an inner-city black person who was a great entrepreneur. They didn't check his background, obviously.
Well, this kind of goes hand-in-hand with Republicans and their habit of inviting... conservative porn stars and conservative strip joint owners,
right,
and
right,
yeah,
a drug dealer from Compton.
Yeah, but let's see if we can build a rule out of this, David. Right wing Republican administration invites so called gangster rapper to the White House who because he's given to Republican causes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Word leaks out that Bill Clinton might be within a mile and a half of Sister Souljah.
Yeah.
National conflagration. And Bill Clinton, billed at the time as America's first black president, has to publicly throw Sister Souljah under the bus.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so here we actually have America's first black president.
Don't forget Ice-T and Cop Killer.
Oh, well, okay, that, yeah.
Okay.
But here we have America's first black president, whose wife has a friend who is an articulate, clean cut. You know, he's very clean cut. Yet when white people talk about the black people in order to say that they're not scary, we think, you know, he's very clean cut. This not articulate, young, well spoken. He can't come to the White House. He's a vile thug.
You know, Bob, what do you think if we went in our Wayback
Machine? And now you're telling me he didn't show?
What if we went in our Wayback Machine and we told Common, Mr. Common, we'd like you to be a Republican. Then we fast-forwarded and we set the election so John McCain would win. Do you think they would care if he was a countless contributor to Republican causes? They would have let him on stage no matter what he did, just like Eazy-E.
Well, remember in Bush's memoir, he said, you know, never mind the million people whose death he was responsible for, or, you know, the American spy plane being shot down and all that technology being given to the Japanese while George Bush was threatening to apologize twice. All the things that happened on his watch, the thing that was most upsetting to George Bush out of his presidency was when Kanye West said that he didn't like black people. This is not true.
There you go. I mean, the thread continues. And see, that. I mean, I guess that's a lesson for black rappers and artists and singers and stuff. Become Republican, and you'll get invited to the White House with no shock or anything. Hannity will love you. He'll come right there, and he'll say, wow, I can't believe you're really well-spoken, and I can't believe you're for patriotism.
You know, you're so clean-cut and well-spoken, I can hardly believe you're black.
Yeah, and so I mean, I guess the lesson to take away from all this is the fact that Republicans once again have made the Democrats race to the water, just because they say that well, let's add it all together. He's from Chicago. He has left-leaning revolutionary ideas.
Did you hear that? Never mind what he said about setting George Bush on fire. Did you hear he was calling for violent revolution and the overthrow of America?
Oh, and there you go. And I mean, in a way,
he probably has Che Guevara T-shirts.
I don't know if he didn't show up or what happened, but yeah, I guess the Republicans scared him away. He said something on Twitter. He put a message on Facebook, and again, it just goes to show you this constant hypocrisy, and they'll do anything for a media cycle. The whores that they are, they will do anything for a media cycle. And that's something that the Democrats really, if you are a progressive and you are listening and you are with the DNC, get this through your goddamn head. These guys will do anything for a media cycle, and they want you to flinch. And the more, every time that you flinch, they're going to do it, and they're going to do it even worse than what they thought of before. So don't flinch.
You know, sometimes I go back and forth, David. I'm conflicted. On the one hand, I want to say, right, don't flinch.
Right.
But if you're the president of the United States and you really do take your job seriously,
yeah.
At some point, don't you say, you know, listen, let's just get damn, we got more stuff on our plate than we can fool with as it is. Let's just not do this.
And then,
you know, everybody said, oh, he caved in, he sold out, blah, 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 and I'm as guilty as the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how I'd respond, you know, because every now and then I try to do that, you know, walk a mile in my shoes kind of thing. I don't know how I'd respond.
Well, you know, I guess this the White House, whenever they do any arts and entertainment in the future, they're going to have a list of Wayne Brady and Aretha Franklin. That's going to be those are the two safe people, I think. Those are it. That's it. Wayne Brady and, because you know Spike Lee can't. Oh, shit.
Spike. No, Spike. No, no, Spike.
No, he
Spike.
Can't come. Maybe Alan West, he can't come. He won't go anyway.
Kanye, you mean?
Yeah, and Kanye, too. You know what's funny? Before I go, Alan West really does look similar to Radio Raheem in Do the Right Thing.
Well, yeah, but he strikes me as a hell of a lot closer approximation of a grown-up Urkel.
Well, you know, I keep every time I see him, I think of Idiocracy Camacho, and I go, "Holy shit! I hope it doesn't come true."
What's the full name, President Alonzo Mountain Dew Camacho?
Yeah, President. But yeah, one last.
Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
One last thing. You know what I think you should mark today is I think it was today, or it's the 60th day of, or the 61st day being in Libya, which means that the War Powers Act
is
here you go, Bob. There you go. What will we do now? Oh, we're just going to ignore that because, again, the media doesn't care about the media doesn't care about where it concerns the Constitution and War Power Acts. Who cares?
Right.
Who really cares about that, Bob?
Right. It's that who cares attitude that just drives me bananas. I don't know if you ran across this or not, David. But I absolutely just sort of stared slack-jawed. Imagine, you know, since we've got Sherman and Mr. Peabody out.
Yeah.
Set the Wayback Machine for 2004,
mm-hmm.
and let's just alter time and you know, even though they weren't interested in doing it, let's say the Bush administration actually screws up and sends in a SEAL team that manages to kill Osama bin Laden.
Mm.
How quickly would the right-wing Republican House of Representatives been on its feet, showering accolades, offering ancient Roman triumphs to George W. Bush, and declaring 3 days of prayer and fasting in support of and appreciation for SEAL Team 6. How quickly would that have happened?
You know what they would have done? They would have made a special customized microphone of Osama bin Laden's head and had Toby Keith perform, right?
Sing into it, right? Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sing right into the bullet wound.
Right, and they would be cheering like, "Oh my God, Toby, you're an American! I'm tearing up for."
Right, and there and there would have been congressional proclamations by the Denny the sweaty wrestler Hastert's House of Representatives, right? I mean, we're square on that, right, David?
Right, right, and
okay, so let's bring Sherman and Mr. Peabody back to 2011 or 2674 Ab Urbe Candida.
Okay.
Majority Leader Eric Cantor said yesterday, "No, really, the House will not hold a vote on a resolution honoring U.S. troops and the intelligence community on the mission that killed Osama bin Laden. We considered that last week, and we deal with the rules that we put in place in the House, and we've said since we assumed the majority that we want to be substantive and meaningful, so we won't be doing that." Meanwhile, at the same time, U.S. Representative Mike Conaway, a Republican from Texas, announced the passage of a House resolution that redesignated the courthouse in Midland, Texas, that had been named the George Mahan Federal Building. It was named after a longtime congressman. Well, they're going to scrub the name off of that, and now it's going to be the George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush Federal Courthouse in Midland, Texas. So they didn't have time, these Repiglickens, to honor the people who brought down the people that they said were the most dangerous people on earth except for homosexuals.
Right.
But they did have time to rename a courthouse in Midland, Texas, and take a congressman who actually served that area's name off of it so they could replace it with Dim Leader and his pitiable fried pork skin eating father.
Yeah.
Got that?
That's
isn't that special?
That is special. And you know, one last thing before I go, because
Fox News would have been 24/7. Why do the Democrats hate SEAL Team 6? Why won't they honor the people who took down Osama bin Laden? Huh?
You know, I think the thing is that we see the hypocrisy again. They don't really mean to honor any of. I mean, to be honest, Bob, you know, the fact that JSOC team, you would think if they were so honored and so well deserved and so patriotic and for America, that they would have higher pay raises under the Bush administration. But I guess that didn't.
Sorry.
They didn't have the money then. They couldn't do it. They didn't have the money for those guys.
Yeah.
And one last thing before I go, I do find it funny that there is an article that I believe the Atlantic Wire has put up that I find quite hilarious, and it says. It's called Why Newt Should Run, and it's done from 1995 by a young upstart political firebrand named Arianna Huffington. And it's a great example of what happens when you come to D.C. How fast you have to suck up to this goddamn punk pumpkin head.
Right. You know what? Yeah. Punk pumpkin head.
Well, you know, someone said he. I found this funny. I stole it from Twitter, but they said he is the first example of a living bobblehead.
Ooh.
Yeah. But anyways, Bob. I mean, I just wanted to clarify that with the comment and the fact. If anyone brings it up, any right winger or Republican or anything like that, anyone listening who brings this up to you. Just say the first gangster rapper in the actual White House was a man named Eric Wright, Eazy-E, in a group called N.W.A. And that should settle it right there.
I mean, that's back when Yo MTV Raps was still on, right?
No, that's the amazing thing. I mean, the fact that they let this guy in the White House, and they let a well-known drug dealer who started his label, Serious Gangster, on the streets of Compton. They must have been admiring him from afar.
Yeah, that's it.
They, you know what? Maybe they wanted him to fund the next war. I don't know.
Jesus.
But anyway,
oh, David. I know.
You know, I think what needs to happen next time someone in the arts world of either hip hop or R&B, soul, rock, pop, whatever it is, they need to take a more proactive campaign and not be scared of some people on the media and just stand their ground. I mean, if it's the White House, I understand that. But...
Oh, and by the way, I've got a link here, and I'll forward it to you.
Yeah.
Just the subject line from Sandra says, maybe not Wayne Brady. So we'll both check this out after the show. David, have a good night, brother.
All right, later.
Bye now. I'm going to have that song in my head. I'm going to have to go with, I get no kick from champagne. Yeah. Oh, darn. Hey, welcome to the program.
Now, you leave Cole Porter alone.
I love that song.
Well, I do, too.
And it's Nat King Cole's version of it I think I love best.
Oh, well, other artists have done it equally as well. Even Frank Sinatra, except he had to change a few lyrics because...
Well, he had to ditch the cocaine reference, didn't he?
Well, and, of course, he had to put a girl, not a guy, in there because Cole Porter, in the original lyrics, was referring to flying with a man.
Yeah, because, right.
No, as I told you in my email, I've never really cared too much for country and western music. It just never did anything for me. But as far as the black artists are concerned, I mean, everybody from Aretha Franklin, oh, my God, the Supremes. You can go forward to, well, just go forward through time.
Yeah, or backwards, too. I mean, Louis Armstrong.
Oh.
Fast forward to, you know, again, Nat King Cole, the Little Richard, you know, who to this day, they stole my act, you know, and you know what? It's true. You know, rock and roll, Jim, was born on the backs of acts that were stolen from the original artists.
Oh, yeah, they were. You know, as a matter of fact, when I was going through Hartsfield Airport, I actually saw Little Richard. And because of his appearance, there were so many people in there making fun of him and just laughing at him and pointing at him. And I felt so sorry for that man. I really did. And I just felt nothing but, you know, revulsion for those people who were making fun of that poor guy. And in spite of, you know, in light of his contribution to music and stuff like that, good golly, Miss Molly, whatever. And I may be dating myself or whatever, but, you know, as I said before, I mean, you know, if I were in the White House, I'd much rather hear Pablo Casals than I would the other guy you were talking about, but hey, times have changed, and I guess you have to go forward.
Well, yeah, and let's remember also, Jim, I responded to your email. This wasn't a music night. This was poetry night. And rap and hip-hop, especially the more socially conscious hip-hop, is a legitimate form of poetry.
Well, of course it is.
And so, you know, on a poetry night like this, you know, by all... I don't know. I guess if Sean Hannity had his way... The cutting edge poetry night at the White House would be a 2-hour reading of Robert W. Service.
Well, I think.
Or that might be a little too rough for Hannity. You know, he's got some pretty delicate sensibilities.
What they would say if they had a reading or quote a reading from Johnny's James Baldwin Hughes wrote?
Sure. But see, that would just, you know, you mentioned James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, you know, that just proves that Barack Obama is a racist with a deep-seated hatred of white people. You know, Glenn Beck was right all along.
Oh, that's not so.
Because, but there's a larger point here, Jim, and that is that in order to even remotely mollify or pacify the white right freaks. Barack Obama has to do that that whole thing from Romeo and Juliet about, you know, deny thy name and be my, you know what I'm saying? He has to deny everything about him because God forbid that he would break out in a little dialect or, I mean, they gave him hell over where he went to church on Easter, Jim.
Well, I know that.
Because, you know, that's a very angry black pastor.
Well, you know, I could give him hell, too, because George Bush, the last George Bush, he was an aficionado of country and Western music and seemed to try to make that his theme song or whatever. But, you know, I would like to see the president, perhaps in the East Room, have some type of tribute paid to the Harlem Renaissance.
Man, wouldn't that be something?
I mean, I would. I mean, because these were very articulate people who knew exactly what it was like to be black and to struggle against the forces that were going to oppress them.
But, you know the, I read it on the air a couple of weeks ago, you know the content of Let America Be America Again. And that's a direct product of the Harlem Renaissance. And can you imagine that being... Now, bear in mind that it came to prominence or recent notice because of all people, Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum said, "Let's let America be America again," is his campaign slogan. No kidding. But if Barack Obama hosted some prominent performer reading Langston Hughes... Forget it. Forget it. He would be an angry black man. He would be calling, the Fox would go 24/7 declaring that by reading that poem, Barack Obama was giving the imprimatur of his approval to a race war in America, and there'd be graphics and flying American flags and martial drumbeat lead up to the race war in America. This is Fox News. You know, Jim.
Well, they got to include Yo-Yo Ma if they want to get a hard on for people of yellow skin?
Well, you know, they only get worked up about African people of African descent and people of below the south of the Rio Grande descent. I'm not going to say Mexican because they despise Mexicans, Guatemalans, Honduras, Salvadorans, Costa Ricans, Panamanians, Ecuadorans, Colombians, Peruvians. They hate them all.
Well, what would happen if they were to play Laconia or something like that by a Spanish composer?
Well, that's Spanish, and they're white folks.
No, they're not. No, Mexican people aren't, in their eyes, white folks.
Well, then, well, if you but you said Spanish composer.
Well, Spanish of one of Spanish extraction, that type of thing.
No, no. See, if they're Mexicans, they're coming here to take American jobs.
No, but we are a racially diverse, diverse culture, and you know I feel like that there should be no denial to anyone, you know, regardless of their background. As you know, I've said before. I mean, you know, I have my own preferences, but I'm not going to impose those on you or anybody else. I mean, if you want to like country music or bluegrass, that's fine with me. You won't hear it played in my house. But hey, if you want to play it, knock yourself out. And if the president wants to select somebody, and well, this man, what was his name? The ones that you played?
Oh, Common.
Yeah, did he actually show, or did?
Well, no. According to David from Maine, he was a no-show, which is just sad.
Well. I show you the times in which we live, but I mean, but you know, you got to admit, I mean, you know, it started with Suge Knight and some of these other people, and the black gangster rap and Death Row Records and stuff like that.
But David from Maine was absolutely correct. I just got a note from our buddy Brandon up in Brooklyn. He said, "Kudos to David from Maine. He beat me to the punch. I was trying to call him, but cooking duties took priority." He said the big NWA breakout record was called Straight Outta Compton. It contained a track called The Police, and Eazy-E of NWA was invited to the Bush 1 White House. But, you know, that's okay. You know, and again, I guess this is another example of I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, Jim. You know, it's okay if you're a Republican.
Well, anything that would suit their interests. And like I say, you know, a lot of the teabagger people and people like that, they really love this country and Western music and all this stuff. And, you know, I see these country and Western artists as they, you know, on IMUS and people like that. And, you know, he has a preference for that. And they seem to enjoy that very much, and that's fine.
Well, there's modern country and there's old country. I mean, there's a thousand miles of distance between, say, Toby Keith and Hank Williams, or Marty Robbins singing El Paso, and, you know, pick one of these focus grouped modern, you know, Ron and Raleigh just said the same thing. He said I like some country. Frankie Lane singing Mule Train, the Rawhide theme, Marty Robbins singing El Paso. It's the new crap that they're calling country music that sets my teeth on edge. If you know, the new stuff that's country, Jim, is all just adult contemporary pop with maybe a pedal steel in the background. If you want to hear what's happening in country music now, you go to an alternative, you go to a genre that is now being called alt-Americana.
Alt Americana, okay.
Yeah, and you'll hear some beautiful, brilliant stuff going on there, and you know, the Drive By Truckers, Jason Isbell, they all rise up out of that genre. But there's tons of it. They're still got an online presence. They used to produce a brilliant magazine called No Depression, that was just a monthly or bi-monthly compendium of what was happening in the genre, but I think you can still find them online at nodepression.com or something like that. Got to roll, Jim. We're at the end of the program, but thanks very much.
Good night.
All right, take care. Bye now. It's a good buddy, Jim. And it is time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody. Thank you for joining in on the program this evening. It is sincerely appreciated. Thanks for the great conversation, your emails, your thoughts. Thanks for all you do to keep us on the air. We started out the program needing 25 contributors to the Nifty Thrifty 250. We got a two-slot contribution, for which we are very much appreciative, which means tomorrow we will start out needing 29. But thanks for all you do in so many ways. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our moderator there. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our recovering blogger, Texas Betsy. Do go and read segment 4 of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the latest creation by our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. It's brilliant writing. It's a must-read. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, and thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who's trying to raise funds in his own right to keep the White Rose up and running. Remember, if the White Rose goes, we go. Okay? Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.